Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming to the Bergino Baseball Clubhouse for another wonderful event. It's our pleasure tonight to welcome Cor VandenHeuvel with his book, Baseball Haiku, the best haiku ever written about the game. Cor was the editor and has quite a few pieces of haiku inside the book, which we'll obviously get to. To those of you, as we always say, to those of you who are here for the first time, welcome. We really appreciate that you're coming to our event. To those who have been here before, welcome home. And it's a pleasure to welcome everyone back to the Bergino Baseball Clubhouse at 67 East 11th Street in the landmark cast iron building. Tonight's event, they're always interesting for me, all the events, and about how they come about is also interesting. The ways tonight's came about is that a very nice gentleman walked through the door one day and introduced himself, and he's sitting right here, and that's Cor VandenHeuvel, who lives close to the clubhouse, so a fellow village lover. And everyone here obviously knows what baseball is. Everyone listening on our podcast, I think most would know what baseball is, but I think a few may not know what haiku is. So I think before we get into anything, I think we should have Cor lead us off with a little discussion of haiku.
All right. First of all, thank you for having me here, and I thank the fans for coming out. And haiku is centuries old in Japan. Started way back in the 15th, 16th centuries out of a form called renku or renga, which were linked verse poems that had little pieces written by different poets coming after each other, reacting to the previous links. And the first link of these renga was called the hoku, and that developed into the haiku and became an independent verse all by itself. And one of the most common misconceptions about American haiku is that it has to be 17 syllables. That's not true. The English language is so different from the Japanese language that the reasons that the Japanese use the 5-7-5 doesn't apply to when you're writing haiku in English. The important thing about haiku is that you capture a moment of existence with a keen perception. In fact, the Haiku Society of America, their definition is a haiku is a moment of keen perception in which nature is linked to human nature. And that's the most important thing about haiku. And haiku is very simple. A lot of people see these few words and they don't really concentrate on them. They think, oh, there's nothing there, because they are so simple. And the beat poet and novelist Jack Kerouac wrote about this problem in his book Dharma Bums. He studied haiku under a poet named Gary Snyder. Now, Gary Snyder and he were climbing up in the Sierra Nevada mountains one day, and they were practicing trying to write haiku, or trying to create haiku as they were hiking. And Kerouac was coming up with all sorts of complex ideas, and Snyder said, no, man, haiku is simple. It's as simple as porridge. And then he gave an example from the Japanese in a translation by R.H. Blythe, who, by the way, is the best translator of Japanese haiku into English. He has four volumes. They came out in 1949 and through 1952. And Snyder was one of the first to get those books here in this country. Anyway, Snyder says, listen to this poem by the great Masaoka Shiki. A sparrow hops along the veranda with wet feet. A sparrow hops along the veranda with wet feet. Well, he says, yeah, that seems very simple. But if you really think about it, you can smell all the rain that's been falling that day and even smell the wet pine needles. There's no pine needles mentioned in the poem. But when a haiku gets working on your mind, you can create a whole world out of it. Anyway, that's what I found that worked with baseball as well. One reason it works so well with baseball is because baseball is so related to nature. It's played in the open air, on a field with dirt and grass. The weather plays a big part in what happens in the ball game. In fact, there is a haiku that demonstrates that very directly here by a woman from Philadelphia. She's a Phillies fan.
We won't hold that against her.
Her name is Helen Schaefer. And here's the haiku. Drooping flag. The visitor's manager moves a fielder. Now, he's noticed that the wind has stopped blowing because the flag is drooping, and he had originally put the fielder over at a certain place because of the wind blowing. He moves him back. So the weather is so important, whether it's hot or cold or whether it's raining or starting to rain. And everything can be related to nature through baseball. Another thing that baseball and haiku have in common is they're both about the present tense. They're both happening now. There's no clock ticking in baseball. It goes out until the last out. And almost all haiku are written in the present tense. If they're not written in the present tense, they give you an idea, a sense of the present tense. So maybe I'll get to some of the haiku in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a question. This is fascinating. Just a question about obviously you have a love for haiku. Where did your love of baseball start
as a kid? Right, and that's basically where I get all my ideas for most of my haiku about baseball. It's from growing up, looking back. Although I bring it back into the present tense.
Well, one of your haiku, which I'll let you read because you can do it a lot better than I can, but it's the one we used in our promotion about the baseball cards in April. And that brought back a ton of memories to me. As a child, that's what... I remember it vividly. It was right in front of my eyes, being a 10-year-old again.
Uh-huh. And that's a lingering snow.
No, the one about the baseball cards on the...
For the rainy day. Okay, I'll read that one. Baseball cards spread out on the bed. April rain.
Yeah, we're doing rain.
No ball game. Come look at the cards.
That's right. Look at the cards because we can't go out and play.
We're doing it right now, right in the middle of the day.
Actually, the first baseball haiku was written more than 100 years ago. Baseball was introduced to Japan in 1872. By a teacher from the state of Maine, my home state, was teaching at what is now Tokyo University in Tokyo in 1872, and he taught the students and his colleagues, his fellow teachers, how to play baseball. And it soon spread all over the country. And by the time this poet I was mentioning earlier, Masaoka Shiki, who later became one of the four great pillars of Japanese haiku. Shiki lived out on the island of Matsuyama, but he came into Tokyo to go to prep school in the 1880s. And by that time, the game had spread to that school, and he became fascinated with baseball. He became crazy. He was called mad about baseball. And he played catcher for the school team. And he wrote the first baseball haiku in 1890. He wrote four that year, and I'll read one of the ones that he wrote that year. Spring breeze, this grassy field makes me want to play catch. Spring breeze, this grassy field makes me want to play catch. Now I can really relate to that. When I was a kid, when there was a spring breeze, I wanted to play catch, even if the grassy field was still covered with snow. And what we would do, we would play catch in the driveway, which I had earlier shoveled out at my father's insistence. And I'll read that particular haiku too. In fact, I think I can remember it. March thaw, the sounds of a game of catch from the driveway. That's it, and I'll read a few more of mine.
When just a question, when you write a haiku, a baseball haiku, are you thinking back to something like when you were 10, when you had that catch in the driveway? And
yes, and that's where I had the baseball cards on the bed.
Right.
Yeah, when it was raining. And here's another one that's very close to when I was a kid, biking to the field. Biking to the field under a cloudless sky, my glove on the handlebars. It made it a great day to play baseball. Biking to the field under a cloudless sky, my glove on the handlebars. But I do have a lot that take place in real games, too. In this one, dispute at second base, the catcher lets some dirt run through his fingers. Dispute at second base, the catcher lets some dirt run through his fingers. Anybody who knows about baseball knows that the catcher is very concerned about what goes on down there at second base, even though he's quite far away from it. And this is probably a case where somebody has tried to steal second base while a pitcher has been winding up and throwing the pitch, and the catcher has tried to catch him by throwing down to second. And I was waiting to see how the dispute turns out between probably the second baseman or the shortstop and the umpire.
It's very, it paints a very vivid picture. You can see that right in front of you.
Right. That's what I play. That's the position I played when I was a kid.
Catcher?
Yeah. And I think I mentioned Masaoka Shiki when he played for his prep school team in Tokyo, also played catcher, even though he was left-handed, which is unusual, you know.
Very unusual.
Yeah.
Do you? Who's your favorite catcher of all time?
Yogi Berra.
I guess that's a no-brainer.
Oh,
yeah. Did you think it gives being a catcher? Do you think it gives you a different perspective of observing everything on the ball field?
Yes, you're like the captain of the ship. In the sense, even though you're not the manager, you still, your eye is on everything.
Yeah, it's interesting because many great managers
were catchers.
Right. And it's interesting. So I don't know if it gives you a different perspective as a poet, seeing things that a second baseman or a shortstop or a right fielder would not necessarily see.
Uh-huh. I have another one that concentrates on the pitcher. Conference on the mound. The pitcher looks down at the ball in his hand. Now, I've thought about that. Maybe, you know, the manager has come out. Well, first the pitching coach comes out. And the catcher comes out from behind the mound, but behind the plate. And they're around him. Then the first baseman comes over. And then finally the manager comes out of the dugout. And they're all surrounding him. So I was thinking maybe he's looking at the ball and saying, these guys have just get off the field. We get ourselves out of this hole that we're in. But if somebody else pointed out to me that he may be blaming the ball itself for his trouble.
It's very possible. Well, the way I saw it was that he's looking at the ball knowing that he's not going to get a chance to throw another pitch that day because the manager's about to take it away from him.
Right.
That he's holding it, the manager didn't take it yet, so.
Right.
You know, you got to try to stay in.
You can talk
right.
him out of it.
Yeah. With these, all the ones I've been reading so far, except for the one by Masaoka Shiki, these are all my own.
And once again, this is Cor van den Heuvel. The book is Baseball Haiku, the best haiku ever written about the game. For those listening, it's available at Amazon. And it's as you can tell, it's definitely worth a pickup. I'd also like to say before Core continues, I know you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but since most of us do, when Core brought the book in, that's really what first attracted me, because I thought the cover was so beautiful. I thought it was really artwork that I would love to have as part of our art gallery here. And that's what made me open the book. And then I got into these amazing haikus. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, just out of interest, before we continue, do you know anything about the artist who did the cover?
Yes, it's a guy named Max Mason.
Max Mason.
Right, and he lives in Philadelphia. He's also a Phillies fan. You'll forgive him, too.
We're in trouble tonight.
No, I love that painting. I saw it when I was in Philadelphia one day many years ago in the museum there. And I looked up the artist, and when I did this book, that's what I wanted the jacket cover to be. But the painting is called The Sign. And you can see the pitcher is looking in for the sign and rotating the ball behind his back. Actually, Al Pizzarelli, before he even saw that, Al Pizzarelli is one of the poets in the book. Even before he saw that painting, he had a haiku that treats the same subject. Here it is. Leaning for the sign, the pitcher rotates the ball behind his back. Which a lot of pictures do.
Absolutely.
I'll read a few more by Al Pizzarelli, if that's okay.
Sure.
Struck out. Back in the dugout, he kicks the water cooler. Now, that's actually a kind of haiku called Senryu, because it's not about nature, it's about human nature. And there are a lot of Senryu in this book, as well as regular haiku. And another nice Senryu was by a guy named Bud Goodrich, who's a White Sox fan. He lives in Chicago. Anyway, Bud Goodrich has a nice, it's actually a two-line haiku. Rookie's first hit, picked off at first.
He obviously played for the Mets.
I'll read another one by Al Pizzarelli. The scorekeeper peeks out of the scoreboard. Spring rain. And here's one that could be about a guy that's reached the end of his career in the game. Leaving the game, the click of his cleats fade into the clubhouse. It's a nice one to read here at the clubhouse.
Yeah. Very vivid.
Yeah.
Very vivid. That's Al Pizzarelli?
Yeah. I'll read another one of mine that I think tries to capture the sense of the lazy feel of a game in the summer. I can remember this one too. I don't have to look it up. Summer afternoon, the long fly ball to center field takes its time.
The imagery, it's so strong.
Well, we try to capture moments that mean something, that capture the love that we have for the game. I'll read some of the Japanese ones.
By the way, do you speak or write Japanese?
No, very little. I had a co-editor working on the book with me from Matsuyama, Nanae Tamura, who helped me with the Japanese. And together we translated them into English. But we do have the Japanese as well as the English for those poems, the Japanese poems in the book. Yeah. We have about 15 Japanese poets and about 30 American poets. This is a guy, this particular Japanese poet was a disciple of Masaoka Shiki, who we talked about earlier. His name is Kawahagashi Hekigoto, and he lived from 1873 to 1937. And he also became a very important haiku poet and had his own school and was a master with disciples of his own. But he was one of the first disciples. In fact, while Shiki was still in school, he went back to Matsuyama in, I think it was 1889, and took a baseball and a bat with him and taught the game to Hekigoto, who was still back in Matsuyama. Because they were boyhood friends as well as colleagues later on. I just have one by Hekigoto. While playing ball, it becomes time to go home for supper. How many times I got home late for supper, my mother had to heat up the supper again because I got home late from playing ball.
Worldwide.
Right. This one is by Shuoshi, Mizuhara Shuoshi, who lived from 1892 to 1981. A night game's bright lights across the great river. A night game's bright lights across the great river. The Japanese poets have what they call season words, certain words that they use in poems which would indicate whether it's fall or summer or whatever. And the word naita, meaning a night game, is a season word for summer, for baseball night game. So they have the Japanese have quite a few baseball haiku about night games. They were one of the first, I think they started having night games even before we have it in the major leagues here.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Do you still write baseball haiku currently, or you have?
When I get the urge, really, once in a while, I do. Yeah, I'm trying to think about what I've written since I did the book. I can't think of any more right now.
Yeah, no. The only reason I ask is because of something you said earlier, that a lot of haiku, being based in nature, baseball is natural for this because of the dirt, the grass, the open field.
Right.
And baseball is now getting back to that. I'm now talking about a major league game, not kids on a field somewhere.
Yeah.
But for a time, major league baseball was astroturf, no, not much dirt, enclosed, indoor ballparks. Luckily, it's kind of going back.
Are going to minor league games now because they can enjoy the sounds of the game itself more, where you get all this music and hype between the innings of a major league game that takes away from the what's going on the field.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This haiku is a good way to get back to those
the
real sounds of the game.
It brought back a flood of childhood memories.
Well, I didn't mention who wrote the first American baseball haiku, did I?
Yes, let's get into that.
That was Jack Kerouac, and we talked about the simplicity of haiku that he learned from Snyder. Well, he wrote the first baseball haiku in English in about 1958. It was published in 1959, not in a book, but on a recording. He recorded about 30 of his haiku with interludes. Between each haiku, he had a couple of jazz musicians play a little excerpt, just a bar or two, with their saxes. It was Zoot Sims and Al Cohn, two great jazz players of the 50s. And I remember hearing that those two, they a lot of times played together on gigs. And I heard them on Cape Cod, in Provincetown, when I was working on a fishing boat there in the 50s. I remember that very well. Anyway, Kerouac was crazy about jazz as well as sports. And he got these two jazz musicians to play it. And it was called Blues and Haikus. And you can still get that on the 33 and a third album. I think Rhino Records has brought it out again.
Right.
And it's really a very interesting recording. And one of the haiku was the first baseball haiku that he wrote. He only wrote two, by the way. But the first one was empty baseball field. A robin hops along the bench. It's the whole thing. Empty baseball field. A robin hops along the bench. But you get the sense that spring has come, and now the field will be used by baseball players as well as the robin, and that bench will be loaded with players soon. So you get a sense of the loneliness of the empty field, but also that baseball is going to start up any time now. So that was a great one to be the first baseball haiku written in English.
And he only wrote two baseball haiku?
Right, I'll read you the other one.
I know he was a huge baseball fan.
How cold, late September baseball, the crickets. So he's got the beginning of the baseball season with the robin, and he's got the end of the baseball season in September.
Could you read that one again? We may have had a guy making some noise in the street.
Whoops.
There he goes.
How cold, late September baseball, the crickets. Yeah, he's not too bad. He only wrote two.
Do you know why that was?
No, but he had a lot of interests.
He was a busy guy.
In fact, a friend of mine just recently brought out a book of Kerouac's complete haiku. He called, actually the plural of haiku is haiku. But a lot of people still say haikus because it seems more American. And Kerouac called them haikus. And as you saw from Blues and Haikus, this record that he made. So he called this his book of haikus. And they wanted to keep his title when they brought it out. This is just a couple of years ago. And I have a bibliography in this book, too. What I feel are great books about haiku and baseball.
Yeah, so in the bibliography are books that are just books that you really enjoy about baseball, not necessarily haiku.
Right. Anyway, here's the Jack Kerouac Book of Haikus was edited by Regina Weinreich and was published by Penguin. It's 2003. It's a little older than I thought. He was really more famous as a football player. And he was a star player for the Lowell High School team up in Lowell, Massachusetts. And he got a football scholarship to Columbia. And they sent him to Horace Mann Prep School to get his grades up before they got him into Columbia. And he played both baseball and football for Horace Mann. Played outfield.
Yeah, he also invented, in effect, he was the inventor of what fantasy baseball. It's different than it currently is, where you use all the players from the major leagues. But he invented this game of fantasy baseball, and there are records in his family's archives of this, where he took regular ball players, major leaguers, and pitted them. He made up team names, and he pitted them against these crazy characters that he came up with. And we did a custom baseball for the New York Public Library. They had a big exhibit about Kerouac a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he had preserved those games that he created when he was a kid.
Yeah, and they still have the original notebooks with his. He literally would go through an entire game of this fantasy league that he invented.
Yeah.
And that became the first fantasy baseball league.
He also created games of horse racing, which he used marbles for the horses. And he even published little books. What do they call him in horse racing? Tout? What do they call
the sheets?
The sheets where they get the odds
right,
for horses. And
right.
Yeah. He made up little books like that on had his favorite horses. I think he used, as well as marbles, he used steel, what do you call those round steel balls that you use in machinery?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know what you mean. Obviously, he was a busy guy. This is
yeah.
why, you know, he had a lot going on.
He knew a lot of things to do on a rainy day.
That's for sure. I think somebody had a question.
I did. I wanted to find out when you decided to write the book and how long it took you to compile all the haiku.
At first, I did a chapbook of my own baseball haiku, which I published in 1999, and that was with Red Moon Press, a small haiku press the Washington, D.C. area. And we also, with the editor of that press, I co-edited a small collection of about 30 American haiku with one Japanese haiku, the one by Shiki, the translation of Shiki. So it was a small chapbook that was called Pastime, a little anthology of 30 poets writing one poem each, one haiku each, about baseball. And then I had about 30 in my chapbook. So that was the germ of the idea, doing those two chapbooks. Then I said, why not do a larger book? And I happened to be in Matsuyama to receive an award, a haiku award, in 2002. And I met this Nanae Tamura, who later became my co-editor for this book. I met her there, and she was interested in baseball. She had two sons who were playing baseball at the time. And we talked about baseball and how it was such a great subject for a haiku, and that a lot of people had written good haiku about the game. And we decided to collaborate, and we did it by mail back and forth. She in Matsuyama and me here in New York. And we sent out feelers to a lot of people and started collecting them. And she did research in Japan on the Japanese side of it. Yes? Anyway, that's how it started, the idea. I didn't start writing about baseball and haiku. I've been writing haiku since 1958. But I didn't start writing any baseball haiku until late 1980s. And I published some of those in a haiku magazine in the early 90s as part of what's called a haibun, which is prose with haiku. It was a haibun about growing up in Maine and New Hampshire, and a lot of it is about baseball. So I wrote a lot of my early haiku about baseball on that subject for that book. Which also was just recently published. I think I told you about this, Jay. It's called A Boy's Seasons, and it's been published just last year by a small press up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire called Single Island Press. So it goes on. Yes?
Most poets usually have another location. So I'm just kind of curious, have you had other careers, or
no, that's my primary career, right? To make a living, I worked at Newsweek for 25 years.
As a reporter?
But luckily, I had a lot of downtime there, and I could work on books like this.
Are you a journalist?
Mm-hmm.
What did you do at Newsweek?
I can't do
it. What did you do at Newsweek?
I worked in what they call page makeup. It's the technical job where we're mostly computers during the last 10 or 15 years, that we create the page. Fit the words in around the pictures and put in the headlines and so forth. I did work one day writing for Newsweek. I picked a picture for the spread. It was one page, a review of a book called The Haiku Handbook, actually by a friend of mine, William J. Higginson. And that came out in the mid-1980s. And the back of the book editor decided to let me have it. And she knew that I was into haiku. She said, why don't you review this book? So I wrote the review. I created the page. I picked the pictures. And it was the best day I ever had in 25 years at Newsweek.
Brought it all together there.
Yeah.
I was just saying, when you talked about having this job where you set the words on the page, I keep thinking about what this haiku look like on the page. So your two vocations have some kind of intersection. Because
well, they do intersect, yes. And I remember when I first got out of college, I worked as a newspaper reporter, the Concord Monitor, Concord, New Hampshire. And I used to want to write the headlines and the subheads. But that was a job for the editors. The reporters could write the story, but the editors got the chance to write the heads and the subheads. And they were like little... I think they may have influenced me. My desire to write heads and subheads led me to a short kind of poetry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the question about... You mentioned earlier the Japanese haiku has a certain number of syllables, and the American version does not necessarily follow that.
Well, some poets write, there's a guy named James Hackett who's not in the baseball book, but he's in my haiku anthology. James Hackett's quite a well-known haiku poet writing in English, and he writes 5-7-5. And Billy Collins has written some haiku. In fact, I read with him at the National Arts Club just a few years ago, because he had just published a small chapbook of his haiku, and he writes 5-7-5. So people do, they like the challenge of a 5-7-5. But in my estimation, there is nothing really inherently aesthetically pleasing about 5-7-5. I think that the content should decide the form. And as long as you keep it short and suggestive and simple, you can do a haiku without counting syllables.
So when you wrote haiku, your haiku, you were not concerned with the number of syllables really at all.
No, and neither was Kerouac when he wrote his, and neither was Snyder. And they were both influenced, as I was, by this translator I talked about earlier, R.H. Blyth, who wrote, he wrote 4 volumes on haiku itself, and then he had another 2 volumes, a history of haiku, and then he wrote a couple of more volumes on senryu. So you got a lot of things there. And he didn't worry about counting syllables in his translations. They vary from 10 syllables to 20-something syllables.
And there's no rhyme at all in maybe it can happen, but there's nothing about a rhyme.
No,
in
you try. In fact, you try to avoid rhyme because it's such a short poem. It takes away from what the poem is about. You don't want to have too much emphasis. In fact, R.H. Blyth mentioned this in one thing. He said, you don't want to have too many jewels on the finger that's pointing to the moon, or it's going to distract from the moon itself. So, and rhyme and other, like metaphor and simile, are tricks of language that call attention to themselves, and so you may miss the what's really going on in the haiku.
So what is the difference between a yogiism, it isn't over till it's over, and a haiku? Did you think that...
I get to come to the fork in the road, and I'll take it. Those are jokes. Yogiisms are really jokes, and they're little twists on words. So they are wordplay, though they're not really haiku.
But they're not.
No. I can't think of one of... I've gone through several of Yogi's books trying to see if one was like a haiku, and they're not. I love them, but they're not haiku. Yes.
You mentioned the second word, haiku and senryu.
Senryu.
Senryu and...
Senryu is the one that's about human nature, like
human
the one
nature.
About the rookie that I read.
Well, yeah. Okay.
That's about how the rookie is...
Right.
You know, it's his human nature that allows him to get picked off. Whereas... with the one about the catcher, you can see that's partly about human nature. He's watching what's going on at second base, but he's letting the dirt run through his fingers, so he's experiencing nature at the same time.
If you've got elements of baseball and elements of human nature, you would have a tough time deciding which one it is?
Yeah, sometimes. a lot of times it's hard to tell which is when it's a haiku or when you call it a senryu. And that's why in this book and my haiku anthology, I didn't try to separate them.
Can you take a second and try and explain when you say that there are classes, there are schools, or there are masters who teach haiku?
In Japan.
So I'm picturing a classroom with people sitting at the desk. And what did you tell them? You've already told them the rules of the game.
Mostly in these workshop situations with a master or with the disciples, they present their attempts at haiku to the master, and he judges them.
So
he tells them how they can make them better.
When you use the word attempts, then it implies that it's not really...
Well,
I don't want to say good, but it's not...
Well, the master will decide.
The master will decide.
But we don't do that in this country.
Okay.
You know, in fact, I belong to a workshop group, but we're all equal. We criticize each other.
When someone first told me about the number of syllables, my initial, because never having heard haiku before last week, my initial reaction was, well, you're going to have to really sit down and plot this out if you only have so many syllables.
Uh-huh.
But having seen the more sort of liberal interpretation, I mean, that's pretty cool. The idea of the thought and the seasons, and that is, you know, I would have trouble finding out that, like, somebody writing a poem and then you tell me, no, it's no good.
I think my question kind of touches on this. They're so simplistic, but do you have to edit them quite a bit, like each one?
Oh, I've worked on a particular haiku for years before I finally got to where I felt it had the exact right words in it.
So that's a long editing process.
Yeah. So and then other times it comes right away. Yes, I'm on Twitter.
Right.
I put some of my haiku up on Twitter.
And I was just wondering how you feel about how the medium is actually rewarding.
Yeah, I like it. That's why I'm on it. I'm on Twitter and I'm also on Facebook. And I enjoy
it. Twitter is really made for haiku, right?
Yes,
yeah,
I enjoy it.
Yeah. Well,
and then I also try to do, fill out, what is it, 57 characters?
It's
140, right?
140.
Oh, 140.
But you have to
so
leave
I've,
room
I've
for
tried
us to retweet it, too.
What?
You have to leave enough room for us to retweet it, because if we want to put your tweet out there, you have to leave it to your extra spaces, because the person who wants to quote your haiku is going to use up a few more characters.
I thought you could just click it. I didn't think you had to put...
When you click it and you retweet it, though, it adds a few more.
Oh.
What would Jack Kerouac say about all this?
I don't know what he would say. Did Allen Ginsberg write any haiku?
Hmm?
Did Allen Ginsberg write any haiku?
Yes, he did.
Really?
But no baseball haiku. He wasn't as good as Kerouac. Kerouac was much better at haiku. But the fellow Bill Higginson, my friend who did the haiku handbook, had a small press, and he published a small chapbook of Ginsberg's haiku. So Higginson thought they were pretty good, but I didn't think Ginsberg came anywhere close to Kerouac's. So I don't have any Ginsberg in my haiku anthology.
He didn't make the cut.
No,
he
didn't.
He made the draft.
No other questions? All right, well, I think for now we're going to wrap this up. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it very much myself.
Yeah, it's been extremely entertaining and enlightening. And once again, for those listening to our podcast, wherever you may be, the book is Baseball Haiku, the best haiku ever written about the game, edited by Cor van den Heuvel. You can pick it up at Amazon or any of your local bookstores, or at the Bergino Baseball Clubhouse at 67 East 11th Street in the landmark cast iron building in Greenwich Village. And thanks so much, Cor. It's been a true pleasure.
Thank you.